Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. It's Trevin McGee again with the Scene Stealers podcast, sitting here with my buddy Trey Hawk.
Hey.
Hey, buddy.
That went so smoothly without Eric to interrupt it.
I know, without him throwing me off. We're a man down today. Mr. Moline is out. He's actually on his way to New Orleans at this point, so don't feel bad for him. He's having a great time. We just have a couple movies to get into. To the Wonder, new Terrence Malick film, and... which it's weird to say new Terrence Malick film within 2 years of the last Terrence Malick film.
That's
bizarre.
It kind of throws you off a little bit.
Yeah, and then this other movie called Iron Man 3 that I don't know if anybody's. You can just probably tune out for the second half of the podcast when we start talking about that.
Just you can drop the levels on my mic so that they don't hear me snoring.
Right? Yeah, okay, exactly.
Good.
But first, we want to do our one things, and ours are both kind of tied together today. The Middle of the Map Film Fest is going on right now, and it actually kicked off on Wednesday with this great Soft Reads playing like David Bowie music during Labyrinth.
It was covers
like
a Labyrinth. From Labyrinth.
Yeah, covers from Labyrinth, yeah. So that was sort of the big kickoff. But it's been going strong since then, and... there's some great movies there, and I just wanted to mention a few, starting, you know, it doesn't make any sense to highlight ones that have already aired, but today, Friday, you've got I Declare War and War Witch are both great. I'm fascinated with Tim Buckley and Jeff Buckley especially, so there's a great Tim Buckley documentary I'd love to check out. Saturday, you've got some more stuff. I know you're going to see Somebody Up There Likes Me on Saturday. I'm actually kind of fascinated with this Minecraft documentary that they're going to show. Minecraft is, if you don't know, it's this video game that's kind of, it's a very untraditional video game, and the thing that's so amazing about it is how popular and widely accepted it is. It's basically like an excuse to play Legos.
Well, and the documentary itself is about the creator, who is the sole owner.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, all of the rights lay with him, and so when Minecraft kind of blew up...
Yeah.
He decided that he was going to make this kind of place, this sort of, I don't know if you'd call it a studio or a collective or something like that, and that's kind of what it's about. It's about the tandem between his success with Minecraft and then what he wanted to build this fortune into.
Yeah. Another one, a local one that I'd love to give a quick nod to is Corporate FM. That aired last year for the first time at the Kansas City Film Festival. It won... and they're showing it again on Saturday with a Q&A following. So that's a great documentary about the death of radio, of freeform, and basically non-big box radio. It's a fantastic documentary. I can't recommend it highly enough. And then for fun, I mean, God, at 10 o'clock on Saturday, they're showing Miami Connection. I can't stress enough... to see this in a theater with a bunch of people. Like, Miami Connection is one of the funniest bad movies I've ever seen, to the point that, you know, I love watching that movie. And it's a draft house film. They bought the rights. They own it. So I think they're just kind of showing it for the hell of it. And you should definitely make time to see that if you're down there, because it's phenomenal. On Sunday, we've got some more that I'm just excited about. A Band Called Death, that's the big documentary I want to see. And our friend Cameron Hawk got to interview a couple of the surviving members a couple weeks ago at the Free State Film Fest. So definitely worth checking out that as well. So it's great. It's also, and then they're capping the night off with the Sex Bob-omb cover band, and they're showing Scott Pilgrim versus the World at 8 o'clock. So... you know, it's always great to see sort of local film fests take hold and do some cool stuff, and this is definitely one of them.
Well, and these Middle of the Map guys really know how to do it right. They've built up the music festival side of it over a few years. Really, it's blown up very quickly, just a handful of years of them doing that. The film fest they integrated last year to just a very small extent, but this year sees a huge expansion, and you can only expect it to just kind of keep growing and the momentum to build. But a couple of things, and my one thing has to do with Middle of the Map, and really it's two specific events, but they're related, and that is on Saturday at 11:30,
We should also mention it's at the Alamo Draft House.
Yeah, all of these screenings are at the Alamo Draft House. Alamo was nice enough to block off a few screens for them to have.
And because Chipotle is a sponsor, any movie you go to, you get a...
Buy one, get one free. For a burrito. Mm-hmm. So if you buy a pass, which the passes are just $25, the badge, you get to go to as many movies as you want. You could actually go to enough movies to get enough buy one, get one free Chipotle burritos to pay for your pass.
Oh, for sure.
You're saving money
by
going to see movies and supporting a local film festival. But on Saturday at 11:30, UMKC, their film program will have a shorts block at 11:30. And then on Sunday at 1 p.m., KCAI, the school that I teach at.
Yeah, where we're actually sitting in right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you notice an echo, it's because we're in the KCAI building.
Well, it's just you're in the presence of KCAI.
That's right. The echo. It's epic.
But KCAI will have a shorts program at 1 p.m. And I think that this is one of the things that local film festivals and thoughtful film festivals can do really well, and that is become the film festival that sort of encourages new filmmakers and rising filmmakers to continue to explore their craft and to continue to sort of develop and become better and better storytellers, better and better visual artists. So I'm really excited about those two events. Each of them are about an hour long.
Mm-hmm.
I think both of the programs come in within 10 minutes of an hour. So, you know, get a pass. Go see a whole bunch of other movies, but then make some time to come and see see some student films, student film shorts block. I know in the KCAI shorts block, we've got 9 short films in an hour.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, if you love some of them, great. There are lots of them to see. If one of them doesn't work for you, hey, there's going to be another one. They're like punk songs. It's
for
like
sure.
Listening to a punk album.
And you know, one of the best things about student film now as opposed to student film, like, even just 10 years ago, the quality, at least on a production
technical
level,
awareness,
the technical awareness is so much higher because, you know, the price of digital cameras has gone down, the proliferation of digital editing software, things like that. It's so much easier to make a polished product than it was even 10 years ago.
I absolutely agree. I mean, the playing field on the technical and the production side has evened out, which puts a lot of the emphasis then right where it should be, which is
on
story and character.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I will just say, you know, I helped curate the shorts block, the KCAI shorts block. I'm really proud of the films that are in it. So I just encourage you to come out, take a break from some of the features and come and check out some of the shorts. You know, these are all young and up and coming filmmakers and they're all people here in the area.
Yeah.
So,
and it's an hour. What are you going to
exactly.
do?
Exactly. What are you going to do in an hour?
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get started on, To the Wonder.
If people struggled with Tree of Life, but looked at it, appreciated it, maybe they really appreciated the visuals, but really didn't get what was going on.
Right.
But there was something about it that they wanted to love the Tree of Life. They just were, they felt like an outsider, like they were newcomers to Malick.
Yeah.
And they couldn't quite get into Tree of Life.
Yeah, it would be a tough first Malick film.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a tough first anybody film. Like, I mean, it's a tough film.
And that is one, just real quick, that I know I reviewed with Eric on the podcast, and I wasn't sold on it when I first saw it.
Yeah.
He was way more into it than I still gave it a positive review, but that, to me, kind of represented him at times, his most pretentious at moments, and it's most self-reflective. It was, and it's part of it's because I know too much about him, because I like him so much.
Sure.
But it was definitely kind of rooted in too much of him and not anything else. But anyway.
Yeah, and I think Tree of Life will probably always remain his most ambitious.
Yeah.
Probably his most divisive and also, in my opinion, his greatest accomplishment.
Yeah.
To the Wonder is much easier. It's right around 90 minutes long. So it's not, you know, hugely meandering. It's pretty efficient for Malick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes in at 112 minutes. So,
oh, okay.
So still under 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
And what happens is relatively straightforward. Mm-hmm. So there isn't much confusion about the nature of the what is going on.
Right.
Which then allows for just exploration of the emotional content between these various characters. And really what To the Wonder is about is about the questions of love.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of human love, the idea of divine love, so love between people,
mm-hmm.
and whether it is ever something that can endure and remain. The question of divine love, and there's this one point where Javier Bardem, who plays this priest, who right. has basically externally is still doing all of his priestly things. He's he's giving mass. He's going and talking to prisoners and listening to confessions, but he is struggling with his own loss of faith. And there's this point where he is giving this sermon, and he says that human love is like a river that will run dry, and whereas divine love is like a spring that is the source that continually feeds that river.
Mm-hmm.
And that only with divine love, that what we can hope for is through God, that our human love can be transformed into divine love. Because human love will always fail, will always run out, will always run dry. But then you have, you know, the person saying that is questioning
right.
their relationship with yeah. God. So it's and that's really that. I mean, that's the bulk of the story. And then you just explore. There's Ben Affleck's character. Is involved at times with two different women. Mm-hmm. One is Olga Kurylenko,
mm-hmm.
And she is the a Parisian,
right. and he ends meets up her abroad.
Meets her abroad, and then they end up moving back to Texas.
Mm-hmm.
I thought
it was Oklahoma.
Maybe it is Oklahoma. Yeah. It's Midwestern because at one point Javier Bardem's character is going to move to Kansas.
Oh yeah.
So it's definitely that, you know, the middle South, middle West.
Okay.
They move back they move to the States, but then her visa expires and Ben Affleck's character is struggling with whether he wants her to stay or whether he's been looking for an excuse to kind of get out of this.
Right.
He gets involved with Rachel McAdams, who is a former... You can tell that they went to school or from the same same town.
Right.
They run back into each other and their relationship. And, I mean, you know, honestly, that's about as much plot synopsis as you need with mm-hmm. a Malick film. But I found this utterly approachable. In fact, there have been a couple of people who have seen it that I almost referred to it as if Malick was taxed with tackling the same subject matter that Annie Hall tackles, but in his own way,
right.
it would be To the Wonder.
To the Wonder. Where do you come down on your rating?
Here's my struggle. I feel like I am committing utter grade inflation this year. The films have been very, very good. And I considered giving this one just a solid rock fist up, not
right.
because it deserves anything other than a rock fist way up. I uh-huh. mean, I think especially Malick fans will go to this and be like, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for making that.
Yeah.
You know, this has to be a rock fist way up.
Yeah.
It's just a nature. It's just the nature of the year that we're having so far. We're having a stunning, stellar, incredible year. And I look to the horizon, and there are just a number of other films that are coming out that I couldn't be more excited about. I was excited about this one, and it absolutely did not disappoint. It's not a film for everybody,
right?
But I do feel like it is a film whose audience is much larger than The Tree of Life.
It's so weird to follow this like expressionistic artistic discussion about.
Actually, it's
Terrence
perfect.
Malick.
It's like dessert. It kind of is. So I have a question for you. Before we get into the plot synopsis, before we get into the specifics of it.
Okay.
There were a couple of trailers that came out for this uh-huh. film. One of them makes it look, I would say, watchable, kind of fun. Uh-huh. The other one makes it just look awful.
Makes it look all dire and yeah. Call of Duty and,
yeah. and
doom and gloom and anonymous
and even, yeah,
terrorist
exactly.
with vaguely Middle Eastern leanings,
yeah,
that kind
least,
of thing.
Yeah, at least far, you know, yeah. sort of Eastern something or other.
Sure.
So one of those trailers made it look just awful and unwatchable. The other one made it look kind of fun.
Uh-huh.
And when I saw both of them in conjunction with each other, my thought was one of two things. Is either this is going to be unwatchable.
Right.
Or this entire first, like, unwatchable trailer was cut from, like, the first 20 minutes, 30 minutes.
Sure.
Can you answer that?
Not without ruining things. Here's what I can
gotcha.
Say. This is this is the best of the three by far.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's the thing with this movie. I mean, are there any stakes in a movie like this? No.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like, yeah, it's the end of a trilogy, whatever. But at the same time, it's part of a bigger puzzle. It's part of the whole Marvel Phase 2, like the road to Avengers 2. This is
right.
a stepping stone on the way to Avengers 2. So are you going to see any major, you know, risks here? Probably not. And I knew that going in some way. So I thought, you know, if this movie can do a good job of entertaining me, if this movie can keep my interest, if this movie can surprise me
mm-hmm.
at least once, I'll be satisfied. And I was more than satisfied with the end result of
oh,
this
cool.
film. And I think that's for a couple of reasons. One, Shane Black was given writing and directing control for this film.
So does some of his personality actually come through?
It does.
Okay.
Actually, a lot of it does. There's some great choices and decisions that they...
And just so people know, a couple of other films that Shane Black did.
Sure. Shane Black really cut his teeth. He was like a whiz-bang kid in the 80s that wrote a bunch of like 80s action scripts that everybody knows. I mean, he wrote the first Lethal Weapon.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote... like, you know, later in his career, he wrote Last Action Hero. He had a really interesting arc in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
He actually appears in Predator. He's one of the guys in Predator that gets killed pretty early. But he's on record for, at the time, he got paid the most a screenwriter has ever been paid for a script, and I think it was for The Long Kiss Goodnight. I think it was the first $1 million script in
yeah.
history. But he's... And I'm trying to think if he wrote the original Die Hard, or he may have written a draft of it, but he established himself as a writer throughout the 80s and then kind of disappeared into obscurity after Last Action Hero. Last
mm-hmm.
Action Hero had like 8 or 9 writers, and he took a stab at it. And that movie reset a lot of careers. That movie was so bad that it even knocked Schwarzenegger down a peg or two
sure.
in the mid-90s. And so he kind of disappeared for a while. There's a great piece in Rolling Stone about him from like 2005 or 2006 when his first directorial effort, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, was coming out. And he wrote and directed Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. At the time, it starred on the rebound Robert Downey Jr., a guy who was like doing bit roles on Ally McBeal and definitely wasn't like a bankable big budget Hollywood star like he is now. He was
sure.
he'd been arrested.
Well, he's a risk.
Yeah, he was
you
a risk and he'd been arrested
he, yeah.
several times for substance abuse and had been continually in and out of rehab. Like his career was kind of on the skids. And Kiss Kiss Bang Bang is this great film. I love that movie. It's a fantastic little noir. It's set in the present. It's really smart and self-aware. It's got a great ensemble cast. It's just a really fun well-made movie that kind of toes the line between... It reminds me a lot of Seven Psychopaths in a,
mm-hmm.
in a way because of how meta it is and aware of itself, and at the same time, it's capable of moments of great seriousness and dramatic effect despite being so self-aware. And it's because of his work with Downey on that movie that he got to do this one. It definitely feels like a comic book movie. At the same time, it makes some really interesting choices. And it doesn't give you exactly what you expect.
Good.
And I know that, I mean, that's one of the many criticisms you levied towards the Avengers when you saw it.
Or most comic book. I just feel like, I feel like for the most part, comic book movies are basically huge commercials for the comic books anyway. Or for, not for the comic books, but for the content of the comic books.
Yeah.
That the Marvel execs have these directors so bound, so tied up. The writers can't kill off characters because, hey, we need to have them just in case we do a sequel or this, that, and the other. And so you're so restrained that you can't do something interesting. And and why would you want to do something radically different than what the content of the comic book? You already have a built-in fan base.
Right.
It's the same reason why most of the Twilight films are maybe not offensive but boring, or The Host was maybe not offensive but boring. That's really my criticism. It's not that it's not that I despise these films.
No,
it's that I find them frustrating because they can't. They have the ability to take these things and make them our new sort of archetypes and our new sort of champions, you know, our mythology.
Right.
And yet they can't, because you've got these corporate execs going, no, 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 superheroes can't do that. And it's
you
like,
realize
no,
how
screw
many
you.
Toys we can make?
Yeah, exactly. You know. Exactly. And that's frustrating. Like, I don't want that leading artistic
No, I understand.
You know, decision.
I will say that this film does a couple of things that you do not expect that are very smart. Very, very smart. And it has, at this point, is responsible for the biggest misdirect of the year in terms of movies.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
Awesome.
And I keep thinking about it and how much I love it and how smart it is, and I can't say anything about it without spoiling it. And they've done such a good job of keeping it secret that I'm not going to spoil it. I'll tell you after. But
okay.
So I love that aspect of it. They do something really smart with the villain. You know, and it's still very much a superhero movie. Like, it's still very much, you know, you have the big scenes of daring do, and ILM outdoes themselves. I mean, the visuals and everything. And it's also, it was shot in 3D. So the 3D actually works really well. It's not very gimmicky, but it looks great. And it wasn't distracting. The depth of field feels really solid.
Sure.
And we saw it in real 3D. And I'm maybe you know the difference between, like, the billion different 3D types, but real 3D looked very good. The other thing about it is it's really funny. It's a it was about 10 minutes in, because I was kind of skeptical, and I was like, you know, it's kind of, this is all kind of familiar. And then something funny happens to Tony Stark. And I was like, okay,
yeah,
I'm kind of ready to, I'm ready to be back in this world, and let's just see where it takes me. You know, like, I wasn't 100% on the bus at that point, but I was kind of more willing to go back to it, because, you know, the Iron Man movies have never been that great anyway, I'll say it, you know. But without, you know, it doesn't really give anything away, but there is definitely a point where they kind of get him out of the suit, and he's out of the suit for a large part of the movie. And there are all these scenes with him and this kid, and usually those mean death. You know, usually those are just terrible, like whenever you have to, like, insert a kid.
Right.
But they do it in such a funny, smart way, where he's still
so
Tony.
It's not the Cousin Oliver of the Iron Man series?
No, he's still Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Just imagine Tony Stark dealing with a kid, and that's what it's like. I mean, he's mean to him, and he says horrible stuff, and at one point the kid says, like, Tony says, like, where's your mom? And he said, well, she's at work. He said, where's your dad? He said, he went out to get scratch tickets, and that was 6 years ago. And Tony Stark says, yeah, well, dad's leave. No sense crying about it, like a little pussy. Like, just says that to him. So there are all these little moments where, like, you would expect.
Is this an R-rated film?
No.
Okay.
It's PG-13, which, again, you know, says, he calls a little kid a pussy in a Marvel Disney movie,
yeah,
which is
so
hilarious.
Weird.
But, you know, it's not the kind of plot where it's like, and then the kid softens his heart, and he's just a total jerk to this kid. And, like, the kid causes him to have panic attacks and all this kind of stuff, and he's just, he's not having it. It's great.
Man, maybe this is my Iron Man. Maybe this is
he has like anxiety disorder throughout the movie,
because
and
of
has
children.
Panic attacks, and children drive him crazy. And you know,
man,
it's there's some great stuff. The plot is your standard, you know, like military. You know, a lot of the plot points are telegraphed, and you're just waiting for the characters to get there.
Sure.
It's, you know, got some standard military weaponized intrigue. There's some, you know, there's some plot twists that are telegraphed. There are some that aren't. And, you know, he actually gives Gwyneth Paltrow something to do.
Yeah.
Which is nice for once. And the end is the end is this nice big whiz bang finale that's fitting of the series.
Yeah.
And if this is the last Iron Man, which it more than likely is, it's a fitting send off. It's a fitting send off to a series.
So it feels good. You feel like you've got some closure.
Yeah, you do. And then it wraps. The way it wraps is really nice. The two big problems for me, because I really liked it. I know Eric kind of liked it. I'm sure he'd give it I don't want to guess his rating, but
probably a minor.
Probably a minor.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give it a solid rock fist up. Mm-hmm. Because for a summer movie, it did surprise me. It did do some interesting things. It is funny, and at the same time, it still is big and epic at times, and a lot of daring do and stuff that we go to see superhero movies for. So I really enjoyed that.
So solid rock fist up for Iron Man. Rock fist way up for To the Wonder.
Yep, and that's it. So go to Middle of the Map Fest. You will not be disappointed.
$25 for a full pass. $10 for each screening. It's totally worth it to just
get a
pass.
So many Chipotle burritos at your disposal. Oh, I mean, gosh. If you think about it, if you go to 3 movies a day, right?
Yeah.
For 2 days.
Yeah.
That's 6 free burritos.
6 free burritos that will pay for your
pass. It'll totally cover your pass.
Yeah.
We're going to go. Everybody have a good weekend, and we'll be back next week.
Adios.